when bad is better.
Welcome to Turning Point. Have you ever found yourself in a bad situation and wondered what good can come out of this? Wise King Solomon wondered the same thing and found answers that may surprise you. Dr. David Jeremiah sheds light on this wisdom as he continues his series, Searching for Heaven on Earth. Here's David to introduce the conclusion of his message, When Bad is Better.
And we thank you for joining us today for this Monday edition of Turning Point. Today we're in the book of Ecclesiastes from the Old Testament and the seventh chapter. We're finishing up Solomon's wisdom about this, when bad is better. And we've talked about how sometimes sorrow can be better than laughter and rebuke can be better than praise. We have a couple of more of these today, right from the seventh chapter of Ecclesiastes in this series we've called Searching for Heaven on Earth. Well, we are very excited about this opportunity to teach this book because, well, to be honest, it's a rather untaught book. Many people refer to key passages in the book here and there, but to go through it word by word, verse by verse, it's a pretty exciting thing, and we've had a lot of fun doing it. I hope you've been blessed and encouraged. And without any further announcement, let's get started with the rest of the message we've called When Bad is Better.
Why is sorrow better than laughter? Because a person who is laughing is not really facing reality. A person who is frivolous and filled with joy and jumping around and partying and having all of this, most of the time it is an exercise to deaden the pain of an empty life. Very little is learned from prosperity and frivolity and festivals and joy and all of that. But often we learn the most important lessons of life. I can testify to that. I know that the most important time in my life as an adult is when cancer has been a part of my vocabulary. I could never have learned the things God has taught me with an unmitigated, unbridled, uninterrupted success pattern of life. We do not learn anything about the nature of life through mirth, through joyous celebration. We pretend that happiness will make us whole. But man's highest purpose is not to be happy. Man's highest purpose is to know God. We can be impressed by truth and doctrine, but usually it takes pain to change us. A.W. Tozier said that God cannot use a man until he has hurt him deeply. Great men and great women are shaped by pain. We've had so many illustrations of that in our church in recent days. How can the day of one's death or the day of mourning be a day of greatness? I was here when we had the celebration service for Dr. Art Peters, who was one of the founders of our college, who lived a long and full life serving Jesus Christ with all that he had. He was a gracious, godly man who lived life well. I saw his wife sitting in the front row, filled with sorrow at his loss, but also with a sense of satisfaction that for those years God had granted them, she had been privileged to live with a good man who had lived his life well. And there was a sense of joy in the midst of the sorrow. Do you understand what I'm saying? That's where Solomon is coming from. He's saying it's better to look back on a life well lived than to look forward to a life yet to be lived. It's better to sense that you've done it right, you've lived right, you've honored God. That's a better day in many respects than the day when you don't know what in the world's going to happen and where that life is going to go. You look at those little babies that are born into your family as children and grandchildren, and you pray to God that they're going to be okay and they're going to walk with the Lord and they're going to honor Him, but you don't know. You don't know the influences that are going to touch them, the things that will influence them. You pray, but there's no guarantees. And so looking back is sometimes better than looking forward. And you sure do learn a lot more from mourning than you do from rejoicing. That's the first thing he wants us to know. Man's highest purpose is not to be happy, but to know God. And you get to know God better when you face things that are too big for yourself. And I've watched that happen during these days in Crest. You know, we're having, and I don't want to tell all the stories, but we're having people come to know Christ as the result of the love of God's people in their lives. One man who was burned was in the medical unit and received Christ at the visitation of one of our pastors. Another woman who we prayed with for the very first time up in Crest was here last Sunday and accepted the Lord. Let me ask you this question. When they look back on their life and the pain of this is over and the rebuilding is done and the insurance company has covered the things that they need to have covered and they've rebuilt, will they look back on this moment of time in their life and say, that was the worst time in my life? Or will they say, rather, it was one of the most challenging times in my life, but the best thing that ever happened to me happened because of that? Sometimes God uses the adversity and the difficulty and the challenges to get our attention. Because we are so busy trying to be happy, He can't get us to listen. So sorrow is better than laughter. That's the first thing. So now you know why that question I asked you, you answered wrong. Number two, rebuke is better than praise. Notice what he says in verses 5 and 6. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. This also is vanity. Now, when we are rebuked for something that we have done, we are prone to resist it, to resent it, and to return it. But Solomon puts a whole new spin on this here in Ecclesiastes when he tells us that a rebuke from a wise man is far better than the praise of a fool. In fact, he likens the praise of a fool to the crackling of thorns in a fire. Now watch this. He used an illustration the Palestinians would have really understood, because in Palestine, when they wanted a short little burn, when they just wanted to warm something up for a moment, they would put thorns under the pot and light them, and the thorns would fire up and they would burn out. They would pop and crackle, and you could warm up some water maybe for a cup of coffee. But you'd never use thorns for a lasting fire that needed to be used for cooking something genuine. So in the same way, Solomon says the praise of the fool is only temporary. It just flames up, makes a lot of racket and noise, but it doesn't have any lasting value. But the rebuke of a wise man, oh, that's something very valuable. The value of rebuke as a means of wisdom is a very prominent theme in the writing of Solomon. Did you know that? I noticed it when we were studying the book of Proverbs, and I went back again, and I want to go through these verses, and I want you to notice how often this theme comes up in Solomon's writings. And I want you to notice that, because it is the one thing we do the worst. Accepting correction, accepting rebuke, accepting instruction from someone. How many of you know that's hard? We don't like to do that. But Solomon says the rebuke of a wise man is better than the praise of a fool. Have you ever been around a stroker? My goodness, everything you do is golden. And you know what? I've discovered over the years that sometimes strokers can't be trusted. Can I get a witness? They stroke you and stroke you and stroke you, and all the time they're stroking you, they're figuring out how they're going to strike you. And before you know it, you find out this person you thought was your greatest fan has become your worst enemy. Now listen to the words of the Proverbs 10:17. He who keeps instruction is in the way of life, but he who refuses correction goes astray. Proverbs 12:1. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid. Proverbs 15:5. A fool despises his father's instruction, but he who receives correction is prudent. Proverbs 17:10, rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows on a fool. Did you hear that? A rebuke to a wise man does more good than beating a fool 100 times. That's what he's saying. Proverbs 25:12, like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise rebuker to an obedient ear. Proverbs 27:5, open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. Proverbs 29:1, he who is often rebuked and hardens his neck will suddenly be destroyed, and that without remedy. In Proverbs 29:15, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. Solomon is saying, Don't get enamored with the praise of people who don't really care about you. Be more interested in the rebuke of somebody you know is wise and who loves you, and listen carefully to their instruction. To whom are you accountable, and who has the permission to come to you and say, you are doing something that is wrong? If you open your heart to that, Solomon says you will look back to be grateful for the rebuke of someone who loves you. Sorrow is better than laughter. Rebuke is better than praise. And here's the third conundrum in this list. The hard way is better than the easy way. That's why the shortcut's never the good answer. Listen to what Solomon says. Surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason, and a bribe debases the heart. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Now, to bribe someone, what is that? That's a shortcut. It's a shortcut to get your own way. But it will always be the hard way. It will corrupt your integrity. It will destroy the purity of your heart. And Solomon says that we're better to be patient in our spirit than to be proud in our spirit. We don't need to take things into our own hands if we will wait on the Lord to accomplish His purposes through us. What does he mean when he says the end of a thing is better than the beginning? In other words, start with the end in mind. The principle is not just a popular idea in a business book. Stephen Covey may have used that as one of his seven most important principles. But it is a principle to be followed in life. Ask yourself this question. Where will this lead me? What will be the result of this action? What are the outcomes of this particular deed? God always saves his best for the last. Satan always front loads his best, and it's downhill from then on. Did you ever notice that? God always saves his best for the last. Satan front loads his good, and after the first day, it's downhill from then. I could illustrate that. Oh yeah, you get a kick out of a glass of wine or a strong drink. Maybe there's a jolt from that at the beginning, and it's fun, but watch what happens if you get hooked on it. It takes you down, 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 down. Yeah, you might get a thrill out of a snort of cocaine, but it'll destroy your life. Over and over again, that's what it says. The end of a thing is better than the beginning of a thing. And that's true in life, isn't it? We come here to this church and we have weddings, and I preside over the weddings, and sometimes I get to go to the reception, and it's a joyous time. Everybody's so excited. And everybody says, oh my goodness, those early days, those are the best days of a marriage. No, they're not. They're the noisiest days of a marriage. The most tumultuous days of marriage. You know the best days of a marriage? When you've been married to the same woman for 40 years. And you know she knows you and she loves you in spite of who you are. You all know what I'm talking about? The best days of a marriage are not the beginning of the marriage. The best days of the marriage are as the marriage matures and becomes a mature relationship. So all of you that think the best is over, it's not. It gets better and better. The end of a thing is better than the beginning of a thing. You see what I'm saying? If it's in the Lord's hands, He always makes things better and better unto a brighter day. Sorrow is better than laughter. Rebuke is better than praise. The hard way is better than the easy way. And here's the last thought. Today is better than yesterday. Some of you raised your hand when I asked you, would you rather have the good old days than today? Almost everybody said yes. You know what? There isn't any such thing as the good old days. There isn't. There are no good old days. The days we're living right now will be the good old days in the future. Right? Just go back and think about the good old days. Oh, there's so many things you forget along the way. Solomon says, do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Don't live in the past. Don't live always talking about the good old days. The good old days do not exist except in the minds of people who have decided to avoid living in the present. Arthur Bennett wrote a prayer called The Valley of Vision that wonderfully summarizes some of the things in this section of Ecclesiastes, and I want you to listen carefully. It's a little free verse, but it's a wonderful prayer. And listen for Ecclesiastes' thoughts in this prayer. Lord, high and holy, meek and lowly, thou hast brought me to the valley of vision, where I live in the depths but see thee in the heights. Hemmed in by mountains of sin, I behold your glory. Let me learn by paradox that the way down is the way up, that to be low is to be high, that the broken heart is the healed heart, that the contrite spirit is the rejoicing spirit, that the repenting soul is the victorious soul, that to have nothing is to possess all, that to bear the cross is to wear the crown, that to give is to receive, that the valley is the place of vision. Lord, in the daytime stars can be seen from the deepest wells, and the deeper the wells, the brighter your stars shine. Let me find thy light in my darkness, thy life in my death, thy joy in my sorrow, thy grace in my sin, thy riches in my poverty, and thy glory in my valley. You find the glory of God in the valley. You don't find it on the mountaintop. When you're on the mountaintop, you forget how you got there. You forget why you're there. You forget who brought you there. When you're in the valley and you have no place to turn but to turn to the Lord, you see Him high and lifted up. And you discover what I have discovered, that God is enough in any situation if you know Him personally. Some of you say, Pastor Jeremiah, I don't understand how all of these things work. These wisdom words of Solomon, I have a sense in my heart that they're true, but how does God use them? Let me remind you that the New Testament teaches us this principle in a very famous verse in Romans 8:28. Do you remember Romans 8:28? And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are the called according to His purpose. Did you know that verse? The Bible says we know that. We're going through this stuff and we don't understand it. We seem like our life is turned upside down and all the things we understood before don't seem to fit. But we know one thing. God knows what He's doing. And we know that all things work together for good. Watch this. To those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. That's the promise to believers. You say, well then why am I so convoluted and confused and even as a Christian don't know what to do? You know, I remember the first time I saw this in this context. Twice in Romans chapter 8 we're told we know something. For instance, back in an earlier verse, not 26 but 22, we read, for we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs until now. What does that mean? We know that this isn't the way life is, that life is going to get better, that God has a plan ultimately. We also know that He's in charge of right now. Then why am I so confused? Look at verse 26 in the same chapter. Likewise, the Spirit helps in our weaknesses, for we do not know what we should pray for as we ought. Do you remember what we learned in Ecclesiastes? God's plan is good. We know that. His purpose is clear. We know that. But His program is mysterious, isn't it? And that's why we don't always know how to pray. Does that change the fact that God's plan is good? Absolutely not. God's plan is good. We know that. We know He's working all things together for the good. We know that someday we're going to be with Him. And in the meantime, He's still in charge. But do we understand what He's doing? No, that's why we don't know how to pray. Am I alone here? I mean, that's the way I feel sometimes. I know what I know. But I also know what I don't know. I know God's plan is good. I know His purpose is good. But I cannot for the life of me figure out His program. So I pray. And my spirit groans. And I pray like this. Lord God, I know You're up to good. I just wish I could figure it out. What is going on here? I know You would never do anything that would ultimately hurt me. But God, somehow, this doesn't make sense and I don't know how to pray. So when I go through times like that, I have to do what Paul teaches us to do. I have to take a step back and remember what I know. And thank God that what I know is far more important than what I can't figure out. And I trust Him. This is the way a Christian lives. This is the way a godly person walks in his life. He's not cocky sure about every little move. He knows that God is mysterious in the way that He does His work, but he knows that behind it all is the hand of God doing His good work. And someday, what is it the old song says? We'll understand it better by and by. Someday when we get to heaven, we'll be able to look back at this time and say, Lord, what were You doing? What was that all about? and we'll be able to trace His hand and see His purpose. Annie Johnson Flint tried to capture this in a little bit of poetry that she wrote. She kind of likens life to a factory. Listen to this. In a factory building, there are wheels and gearings, there are cranks and pulleys, beltings tight or slack. Some are whirling swiftly, some are turning slowly, some are thrusting forward, some are pulling back. Some are smooth and silent, some are rough and noisy, pounding, rattling, clanking, moving with a jerk. In a wild confusion, in a seeming chaos, lifting, pushing, driving, but they do their work. From the mightiest lever to the tiniest pinion, all things move together for the purpose planned. And behind the working is a mind controlling and a force directing and a guiding hand. So all things are working for the Lord's beloved. Some things might be hurtful if alone they stood. Some might seem to hinder, and some might seem to draw us backward, but they work together and they work for good. All the thwarted longings, all the stern denials, all the contradictions hard to understand, and the force that holds them, speeds them and retards them, stops and starts and guides them, is our Father's hand.
That's a little bit of verse and a whole lot of wisdom. And we hope that it will be an encouragement to you as you think back over those words throughout this day. Tomorrow here on Turning Point, we're going to talk about wisdom to be thankful for as we continue our journey through the book of Ecclesiastes, searching for heaven on earth.
Dr. David Jeremiah's message originated from the pulpit of Shadow Mountain Community Church, where he serves as senior pastor. Is God using this ministry to touch your life? Let David know. This is Mark Larson. Join us tomorrow as we continue the series, Searching for Heaven on Earth, on Turning Point with Dr. David Jeremiah.